Welcome back to NELP's Young Professional Network podcast, Growing in the Green Industry. Today's podcast is powered by our Young Professional Network partner, Steel. Steel makes a full line of gasoline and battery-powered outdoor power equipment for the demanding landscape professional. Find yours at steelusa.com. Your hosts today include myself, Brett Lemke with RM Landscape, Skylar Westgard with Landcare. Hello, Skylar. How are you today?
Doing great, Brett. It's good to see you.
Wonderful. We have a guest. It's not just us. And I joined you. I missed you last week.
So yeah, we did miss you solo. Last week. It's good to have the high power guns back today.
Yeah. It's nothing like getting a text. I think what you guys are maybe like 5 minutes in, like, are you joining this podcast? Oh, I didn't have it on my calendar for some reason. And then all of a sudden, no, Scott's got it. No doubt that you could have covered it. And sorry about that.
I'm just like glad to see that I'm not the only one that sometimes, doesn't make it to where I'm supposed to be. But you're sharing a lot more than we shared in the podcast. We didn't say anything about you.
I needed to come out. Calendar.
We just said, you're traveling today. We miss you. We will see you back soon.
I was doing all those things and I had it in my calendar and I probably should have been on that call, but I'm right back into it. I'm fresh. So I'm ready. I've got all sorts of curiosity in the world. And I think we've got a cool guest for our listeners today to dig into. So why don't you do the intro, Skylar?
We do have a special guest today that we're excited about. We're excited about all of our guests. So we have Kate Dean from Rupert Landscape. Let me just give the audience a little bit of intro, Kate, about you as we get our conversation going. Kate has almost 20 years of customer service, sales, and process management experience. Deciding to pursue her love for landscape and gardening, something that all of us have done in our careers, Kate joined Rupert Landscape in the summer of 2019 as an area manager in their Laytonsville maintenance branch. During her tenure at the branch, she also spent a year as a business developer, putting her outgoing personality to work before returning to her role as an area manager. She transferred over to the training team in the fall of 2022 as the training and development manager to support and further develop their training programs and initiatives. So I'm excited to talk to you. We were prepping a little bit in preparation for the call today, and talked about how, Kate, you and I have very similar job titles and what we do, supporting teams in training and development, whether that be creating content, facilitating training in person and online. So we're really excited to have you here today. Thanks for coming.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, Skylar. I'm excited for the conversation as well. I think we all learn more when we get to exchange ideas and talk about what it is that makes us so enthusiastic about our roles.
I was trying to figure out how to make my like, why don't you two just pretend my business is a branch of one of your companies and you just go for it. Say, here, do this. And I just sit back and I'll just take notes today. Like, this could be very much, I could be at most everyone. Don't we always sort of leave with like, I'm going to have to try that. But this one, I've got my pen ready. I'm prepared.
You know, I think that's the goal of the podcast as we leave at least the audience with ideas, thoughts, notes that they jotted down. But it's true, Brett, we always leave also with thoughts and ideas like, wow, we should try that, or hadn't done this before, or how could we incorporate that in our business. So Kat, why don't you start off by just giving our audience a little bit of background. 20 years of customer service, sales, and process management experience. Give us a little bit of the background of you and then what brought you into landscaping from where you were before.
Sure. My love of landscaping actually came from my parents. Both of my parents have landscape degrees. My dad was turf grass and golf course management, and then my mom was ag education. So when I was a kid, we went on nature walks and hikes, and it was a lot of, what plant is that? And what fun fact do you know about it? So just through natural curiosity and exposure, I really kind of got the bug kind of early on. My dad was a professional landscaper and he didn't want his kids to work that hard. So he kind of pushed me away from the industry when I was in my teenage years. And I was like, oh, it'd be cool. You know, let me go try and do something with plants. So I started out in a garden center environment and learned a ton more about plants, loved it, loved my customers, loved, you know, when you would get the upgrade sale for an install as well, and having the opportunity to go and actually plant the things and have something to show for what it was that I was working towards. And then, you know, reality set in and I needed a big girl job. So I was drafted to go into customer service, and I worked for a customer service call center for a publishing company for almost 10 years, which is a long time, gave me a lot of experience with customer exchanges, customer interactions at all levels. But that company also did a lot with training. We had weekly training sessions in small groups, then monthly training sessions as a big group. But the other thing that they brought in is they brought in the Lean Six Sigma program into that organization, which many of you are probably familiar with. And it really got my brain thinking differently about processes and about efficiency. So in everything that I was doing, not only with customer interactions, but also we were attached to a warehouse for our products. It was all very interesting to see how process played into the ability to get a finished product quickly and at a high quality. So after that, then I went into software sales, which is a completely different foray. I kind of got burnt out on the inbound call center, taking almost 200 calls a day and just sort of sitting in a chair wasn't for me. So I went into software sales, which was a traveling position. So I got to get out, I got to meet my clients a lot more face-to-face, which was exciting. Still wasn't quite meeting my needs and didn't quite get me where I wanted to be as far as, you know, I remembered that productivity and that sense of accomplishment from when I was a teenager, and I would go plant something and I could drive past and see how it turned out. You know, software sales kind of, software lives in the ether. Like, we know it's in the cloud somewhere, but we're not exactly sure what it does or how it does those things. So for me, I just wasn't getting that sense of pride and fulfillment that I had elsewhere. So I started looking again and ended up finding Rupert Landscape.
That's neat. You know, Kat, I just have to say, I'm thinking about my dad when I started my career in landscaping after college and stuff. And he was in supply chain management, helping build space shuttle booster rockets, which is pretty cool. But he was like what you said. He's like, man, it's so cool what you do. You can actually like look back and see what you did and notice like it's better. It's more beautiful. And he's like, I just, you know, sit at a desk and it's hard to kind of see what you did that day. So it kind of made me think of that. So it's kind of a cool story going from sitting in a desk, taking 200 calls in a call center day to now like writing articles about enriching landscapes for pollinators, you know, in the Rupert blog that you do. That's kind of a cool transition. Yeah.
Well, and a lot of our guests have, you know, they've stuck with it. They put their time in the horticulture and then they stay within that pretty linear path of different roles and different experiences. To be able to jump out and jump in, how quickly did the outside world for that early time within Rupert, or even now? I mean, now I see how it can apply pretty quickly, but were you able to grab all that learning and time with software and customer service as an area manager and in that function, did it work for you, or was it a hard transition?
That's a really good question. I think the fast-paced software sales environment did prepare me for being an area manager in a lot of ways, being able to organize my thoughts and, you know, competing priorities as well as managing frontline customers. And again, I leaned on that customer service experience that I had to really adapt quickly to shifting needs, because when you're dealing with landscapes, you never know what you're going to get. And Mother Nature plays a big role in that. So, you know, you can get rain one day and snow the next, and you have to be able to adapt your plan. So I think that definitely helped a great deal. However, on the flip side, I didn't necessarily have the street cred that a lot of folks get when they come into this industry. You know, you've been doing it for a really long time. I always did it on a much smaller scale, kind of in my personal life or my dad kind of stayed in and around landscaping and handyman type work. So I had done it in a smaller scale or on a kind of a residential group level, but never at a commercial level. So it was definitely for those that worked directly with me, a bit of a question mark. Can Kate do the work?
Well, and that's a good question for the both of you. How much, what by percentage would you say, we'll call it manager level, not field related, are coming from outside the industry? And what is that like to, you know, how did Rupert help you, Kate, get there? How are the two of your organizations helping those that, you know, they are hired for the values and all the right other parts, but maybe the street cred was a little late, right? And so I'm curious, like, is it a growing number, or is it still horticulture is the base that we're dealing with? How about you, Kate? How about you go first?
Sure. I mean, I really think it's a little bit of both. We're also seeing, in my experience in the past 5 years, I'm definitely seeing more kids coming directly out of school, you know, with degrees in horticulture, in business administration, who are coming into those mid-level management roles and are learning the pieces that they might not know kind of through the activities that they're experiencing with their teams and through the seasonality, at least on the maintenance side. On the construction side, definitely seeing the same thing. You know, our project managers, we're seeing more and more of them coming directly out of college or making an industry shift. What about you, Skylar?
Yeah, I was going to say similar. I was just thinking of a couple of our team members and some conversations we had recently on our L&D team about people coming into land care or into our industry from other careers. So yes, there's kind of two parts, us bringing in fresh students, not just from horticulture programs. So looking outside, for example, we've been looking a lot more at hospitality programs at universities and starting to recruit and build relationships with faculty and programs in the hospitality side of things, because it translates really well to that, what we would call an account manager, a branch manager. You know, for you, I think that would be the area manager position you're in. The other part is career shifts that you talked about, Kat. We've had a few people come from public education, like high school teachers that are like kind of tired of that very demanding, typically lower pay world and saying, hey, this could translate over. I'm going to come into landscaping. I've always had a love for the outdoors and things like that. So, yeah, Kate, I would agree. I would agree with that.
Yeah, it's a very interesting mix. I think that if you get the bug, though, you're going to come back to it at some point in time. Mm-hmm. You know, if you have that desire to be outside, it's something that it's hard to restrain or, you know, keep your butt still in a chair for, you know, an 8 to 10 hour day, depending on your workload. So it's all about finding that balance and finding what you're passionate about, for sure.
But what, you know, so, cause I think we all are presented with the opportunity that this person has would be a really great fit, but they don't know horticulture. Right. And so we often, I would say more often than not, or they don't have that experience, as you say, and they're just left, it's gone. That opportunity's passed by and that person moves on. What kind of steps have you put in place that helped people learn, not just the horticulture part, but just the industry? Is it just patience and a little bit of time? Do you just front load it in a certain way that just really catches them up? What's an orientation of a non-industry person really look like? I mean, is it different?
Or that's not a good different? Yeah, that's the follow-up question to, like, okay, we're bringing people in that may not have had their, like, a degree in horticulture. I mean, maybe a place to start for us, like, our onboarding process is the same whether they graduated from horticulture program or they graduated from business or hospitality, or they're coming in as a career shift. Our onboarding process and the training and information they get is the same for all of those people.
Agree. The onboarding piece isn't what's unique. I think what's unique is that second tier of training. And I think a lot of that is driven by what role they've selected and what the manager's path and plan for that individual is. the other thing is beyond just the resources that I know Rupert and Landcare have, there's a ton of free resources. You know, the Google phone imagery, where it connects automatically to plant ID or disease ID, the Apple phone does the same thing. I have colleagues here in our corporate team who they love doing walks with me because I'm like, just use your phone. I'm not going to give you the answer to what's wrong with that plant. Let's use your phone. Use the resources that are available to you. And if you're interested in learning, it's all accessible to you. You know, I always, you know, say you can Google just about anything. And if you dedicate the time to the research, you're going to find a resource that's going to help you learn what it is that you're looking for.
Yeah, this day and age, right? Information is not hard to get, right? And
yeah.
And you could probably, we're not advocating that you save yourself tuition money, everybody. Keep going to school, stay in school,
absolutely.
Right? All that kind of stuff. But continue that education doesn't require all that much effort. And a yellowed leaf, there's an app for that compared mm-hmm. to many years before. It was like, no, you had to walk around the textbook.
My library.
We all got it. The reason I'm sitting so high in this video, I'm sitting on my Dur book right now, so it sits really nice. I asked that question again. Many of us in your industry admire both your organizations and scale and what you've all done and the time and effort that, you know, we believe that you all get to put towards that versus owner operators have to spend this time and think through this. There isn't a great deal of differentiation. And what I'm hearing here is be true to who the organization is from a net orientation piece, understand the roles, and then leave it to the good hire that you hopefully made that they're going to work really hard and accept the training you have. But fundamentally, there needs to be training, there needs to be orientation, there needs to be time spent with that person to help them along. What does that look like over a course of a year for you all at Rupert? What's the fundamentals that you believe that it's put somebody on a path to success from a training and an orientation? I don't know if it's generalized or if it's very role specific, but I imagine that keeps you very busy throughout your days and weeks and year. But what's the path that you found to be most successful?
I think it's a combination of, you know, kind of the structured training and onboarding Skylar alluded to in terms of, you know, kind of everyone in the organization gets these same series of trainings, whether they be videos or in-person trainings, but then also seasonally appropriate training in the branches. So for us, I think that's where a lot of the learning comes in, is leaning on our experience and our team members out in the field and in the branches to share their knowledge, because you learn more from the people you work with every day than you do from, you know, a Kate or a Skylar or anyone else in the company. If you're able to hear from somebody at a job right down the street from you that you're familiar with, that this is how we would approach this at this season, it's hugely impactful for the entire team, the people at their level, the people above their level and below them. So I tend to lean a lot on those tenured crew leaders or field managers who know what needs to be done, and then just give them a voice, give them an opportunity to share, you know, what it is that they know. And I think for anybody, especially a mid-level manager like myself coming in, when I started at Rupert, I was extremely fortunate to be paired with, you know, 15-year Rupert veterans who my field guys taught me the Rupert way of doing things. I didn't dictate to them how we were going to do it. We worked together to figure out the best way to approach jobs and to approach solutions.
Yeah. Kate, I love how you said, you know, give those experienced people a voice, let them, motivate them to be mentors mm-hmm. and coaches as well. I assume it's the same for you as it is kind of for me, is there's a balance that we try to strike between corporate training, right? Like what we can do like holistically or company wide mm-hmm. with the need for local mentorship, coaching, and training in the branches or in individual locations. So that's sometimes tough to figure out. But yeah, I like that's why I like how you said giving the experienced people in the local you know, on the local teams of voice to coach. So I know for me, it's finding that balance between, you know, making myself scalable, you know, and how much does that need to happen versus like what tools, practices, opportunities do we put in place for local leadership to coach and train those people? Another thing that is important is that those employees are able to set, you know, goals and communicate what their needs are. One thing that we do at Landcare is instead of doing annual reviews, we do quarterly, what we call quarterly coaching. So every quarter, an employee has an opportunity to sit down with their manager and discuss some needs, some goals, some training that they want, you know, every quarter. So yeah, the balance between personalized individual training and then what we can like this umbrella of the corporate support over that is, you know, I'm not sure I always have that balance well, but it's something that is needed. I don't know if that's true for you, Kate, as well.
Oh, absolutely. Finding the balance is always going to be a challenge, especially with growing organizations. How much can you, you know, just structure from a high level down? You know, Skylar, I'm sure as we, you know, are moving towards spring, we're all starting to think about, you know, maintenance operations in spring. You know, it's time to get the mowers back out, the line trimmers, all of that. I personally can only teach so much at a high level on how to safely and effectively use those pieces of equipment. A lot of that has to go back to those crew leaders who have to execute on that work every day. So I can only train to a certain level. Those crew leaders have to do that hands-on coaching and mentoring that you talked about, because the first time somebody gets on a mower, they're not going to stripe it perfectly. It's not going to be right, but it's all about those gradual improvements and working folks towards their goals. I've definitely had guys get on a mower and they just don't feel comfortable. You know, that's something that I don't know that I could at a high level coach them through, but their field manager or their direct operations manager might be able to get them over that hump or not. And maybe we find out that, you know, landscape is not the fit for them, or they prefer planting and maybe enhancements is the way to go. So it's all about, you know, trying to figure out a way to empower the folks who have the ability to impact that end user's experience in the learning process. And like I said, I think a lot of that comes from getting the core data to those team leaders so that they can make informed decisions and coach and mentor, like you mentioned, Skylar.
I'm listening to that. The most valuable part is, again, that those that you're working with constantly and where you can learn from a mentoring level or a direct report level, so they understand the accountability to it. And then obviously I think that kind of coaching and training is done at a level that is much more approachable and just understandable versus that of the corporate world in pieces and parts. I'm taking that note down pretty well, that like as much as you can support it on the offside, off seasons and all that, it really is just, that's just practice and sort of keeping the brain fresh for what's going to be the core of the season, rather than I learned it all during the winter, I'm good, just let me go at it. And it's like, no, here's the space, the best space for that.
Yeah. And then, you know, it's flipping back to the other side again, having the leadership team at the organization, whether big or small, set like standard operating procedures or best practices, or this is how we kind of all do things together. There's that side. So you're kind of balancing these sides of things, I would say, that are both important equally.
Well, the trainer element of this is a big part of it. The person could be the best horticulturist, but they don't have the components required to teach somebody rather than just perform the work. And that's been a big world of ours, is just helping people understand how to teach something, and then the best ways for it to be received, rather than the assumptions, well, I just showed you, or I just told you, don't you get it, right? And you'll hear that a lot from just that field level that says, yeah, just do it this way. Why aren't you able to do it this way? And so helping them get through that frustration and teaching that through. And I think just keeping everybody sort of at a level set that this is a constant learning space. You're going to have to teach it, or you're going to have to learn it. And one of the two, and that means you've got to you know, the word patience and the word, you know, repetition, all those other fundamentals come into play and it'll eventually work. But be patient, be focused on getting it through.
Absolutely. And I think you brought up a great point there in terms of training the trainer. You know, one person learns visually versus, you know, one person learns, you know, by touching and doing. You know, it's a balance there of allowing that person the opportunity to touch and do, but in a safe, controlled environment. I know that's one of the biggest challenges for us as a training team. And I talk a lot to my mid-level management groups about, hey, you know, spring operations are great and it's super exciting and everybody wants to get right back out there and get back to it. But we need to do so in a safe, controlled way because they get very eager to go back out there and they forget a lot of things that, you know, they haven't done in 3, 6, 9 months, depending on how cold or, you know, if they left early for the season, whatever it may be.
Yeah, that's a good question. Do y'all, I don't know if it's anecdotal, but it's like, hey, spring comes around, here's mower training again. And you have, you know, you hope that you have 15-year veterans with you in your organization. They're like, oh, great, mowing again. I'm a pro. I've got it, right? But what? How do you all see that? Do you train in a different way for those more tenured individuals? Do you engage them in the training? Is it a look different or is it no concept? Everybody needs the reminder. Everybody needs to be recertified. Because you hope that you have good tenure, but everybody yep. needs to learn different things, right?
It's a little bit of both. For me, if I have tenured team members who are capable to teach, coach, or mentor, I would either, you know, make them the leader of a station, for example. You know, maybe they're a great mower person. So I'm going to put them as the teacher on that station. Or I pair them with a new person and then they become that accountability partner or the buddy. And I'll give them specific tasks. The last class I was at, I had a guy who was brand new. Like I had gone through the evaluation with the branch. Who is everybody? How long have they been in the industry? We ran through the list and there was a 10-year person and there was a 10-day person. And I was like, oh, they're going to become best friends now. And I pulled that 10-year person aside and I said, your job is to not touch any piece of equipment. Your job is only to make sure that this 10-day guy has an opportunity to touch the piece of equipment within safe, appropriate standards. And that guy took that ownership of that new individual having a good experience at this first ever landscape training that they both came to me at the end of the day and they were best friends. They had found things in common, and through that exchange and that responsibility that I assigned, they figured out a path forward. They had set up a plan because the new guy was not great with the line trimmer. Nobody's good with the line trimmer the first time. Like, let's be honest. I see you guys. Exactly. I call it the mower of mass destruction because it's dangerous. Yeah. So he was really not good with the line trimmer. But they had set up a plan for one day a week. They were going to come in early and they were going to practice in the field behind the shop. I'm like, really? You guys are going to go above and beyond like that? They had made this plan throughout the day after the guy felt bad because he didn't meet the standard operating procedures. But you just, you find something that they're good at and you give them that responsibility and they will lean into it. And it's again, sometimes you have to assign it. At first, when I gave them this task, they were not excited. But by the end of the day, they understood why I had made that pairing.
It's a really neat example of how it can be motivating and exciting for a more tenured leader to take that coaching role. And for you, Kate, to kind of build that and help nurture that opportunity for that individual to do that. I think sometimes, I can't say we like generally, but maybe I'm guilty of not, you know, throughout my career, not giving enough opportunity for tenured leaders to step into a role that allows them to coach somebody else. And I think probably a lot of us, have been in that role as we progress in our careers to coach somebody else. And how rewarding is that to feel, to see somebody else progress? I know I feel like that's part of why I do what I do in the role that I'm at. And Kate, I'm sure you would agree too. Like, we're kind of like teachers and nurturers and coaches at heart. And so allowing other people to do that. I love that story and how you gave the 10-year individual opportunity to say, hey, you're the coach now. You are going to help this other individual be successful.
Well, but it also fixes the Brett's question is really the boredom guy or the guy who's in your group. And he's kind of got a negative attitude about training because he's been through it 10 times. You know, am I not proficient at my job? You know, that's that they feel like they're in remedial class. You have to give them a role or a responsibility to dissuade that negativity from kind of seeping in. So you have to figure out, what does that look like for this team member? How am I going to get them to be engaged in the learning? And that's the question that each of our leaders has to ask, is how am I going to engage these learners? And what does that look like? So you have to look at all of those different factors.
It is. And again, you hope that you have that diversity in your organization and that you can lean on those pieces. It's, we've seen the success of it when you can have, you know, buy-in at, you know, the teaching part. And I think there's a tremendous amount of learning that happens just by teaching. Right. So, and I think I actually enjoyed that a great deal more in terms of, especially I remember when it was studying in school for some port test or some test, but it would be, let's, you know, I'll help teach some other folks, or we'll, you know, I'll ask the questions and curiosities, and it just helped me retain information at a greater level. And so, it is, it's important to broad stroke it. Well, everybody needs to know how to start and stop a mower. There's somebody that needs can teach that, and there's somebody that can show that, and there's someone that's got to just listen and learn that. And I think if you know who each of those folks are, you, then you're going to get better feedback. If you're asking for feedback, how that training went, you're going to get more success rates than just that was valuable to me. But it was all about the same thing. Still about that mower.
Yeah.
All right. So then we have the spring is upon us. What should we as listeners and contractors be thinking about right now at these early stages, as we, to your point, we shake off, there's no snow, but there's no, you know, we get a little snow pile on us here and there, but it snowed this morning here. Can you believe that? 60 degrees last week. It's good. Pick your choice here, Mother Nature. Okay, what is it that you find to be important as we walk into those spring season changes?
It's all about thinking a couple steps ahead as much as possible, you know, constantly having that 2, 4, 6 week look ahead. At this point, you know, depending on where you are in the country, we're going to be mowing this month. I mean, grass is greening up very, very quickly. So if we're thinking about it on the maintenance side of things, making sure that all of our equipment is up to par, we've done a good equipment inventory. Everybody knows what their job mix looks like as we start heading into, you know, regular maintenance. If they aren't familiar with those jobs, this is a great time to do safety walks and start kind of creating your plan around those jobs. How are we going to approach new large jobs, which, you know, come with different challenges? And then same for smaller jobs with high amounts of detail. You have the same challenges there. How do we make sure that we have the right team members prepared to do that? You know, those downtown areas that, you know, we're going to be planting our spring flowers. I mean, I'm looking at this week's weather here in the Maryland area, and it's 60 degrees, and I'm headed to Georgia to visit our teams, and it's going to be 70 degrees down there this week. So we are perking up really, really quickly. So making sure we have good plans and our teams know what those expectations are around when we're going to kind of switch gears and it's going to be full steam ahead.
That's a, I think that's a very good point. Looking forward, you know, what is it going to be? What are we going to be doing in 2 weeks from now, 3 weeks from now, 4 weeks from now, and then getting ready for that, whether that be planting, mowing, edging, you know, the what did you call it, Kate, the mower of mass destruction?
the mower of mass destruction, the line trimmer.
Yeah,
because especially you mentioned edging with in conjunction in the same sentence as a line trimmer, that's where our guys really go wrong. Like there's a different piece of equipment for that for a reason, right?
Oh gosh.
I mean, those are the simple ones that especially new guys, they don't know the difference. Because, you know, think about it. If you're, you know, only landscape experience has ever been, you know, mowing around your home and you only had a mower and a line trimmer, you did it all with those two pieces of equipment.
Yeah.
For good or bad.
Yeah, right. Well, it brings up a point too that as leaders or as trainers to think about, and this is difficult, is to try to put ourselves in the shoes of those really new people, whether they're new out of college or just maybe they're new out of high school starting, or they're new in our profession. It's like, for me, I've been doing it since I was a teenager. So some things that I'm like, oh yeah, this is, everybody knows how to, you know, what fuel to put in a two cycle engine or whatever, but not everybody understands that, or everybody knows how to use a zero turn 60 inch mower, like who, you know, but not everybody understands that. And that can be true also of things like the soft skills. Oh yeah, we just promoted a production manager. Of course they know how to use Outlook calendar to accept. Well, that's not necessarily true. So trying to put ourselves in the shoes of those newer people to understand what their experience and what learning feels like for them and what the needs are. And that can be really hard to do.
Oh, absolutely. And you're not going to know what somebody doesn't know. That's always, you know, a good place to come from, is you have to assume that they don't know. And not everybody's comfortable asking questions. So creating a safe space where they can ask questions, you know, they can object if they disagree, and you can have a productive conversation around it, is hugely important as you start a career with someone, you know, because I think we all know the challenges that we face with just finding people who want to do this type of work. It's really sad when we don't give them every opportunity to learn once they get in the door.
Well, and I think it's those, and I always go back to that person that has to wear many hats in their organization. Then they have to be, it's important to be very clear on what they, you cannot delegate the training and the onboarding of that to somebody else. So you're going to have to do it yourself, but you have to be very clear right up front. Please ask questions, or I'm going to make these assumptions. Tell me when I'm not hitting that, or I am hitting that, and work through that really, really quickly, because 1 month from now, oh, now you're telling me that you're uncomfortable with this or not familiar with this. And it's just that sort of gap between communication could just, it could ruin it. And so, because of course, everybody learning, it takes time. They're going to make mistakes and you want to give it the shot. But of course, we're always so urgent to say, I want to put this person in the seat so they could be effective right now and they can start making change. But there's a period of time when that change is going to happen. So if you want to really make that sink, get in it quickly and make it very clear. Trickle your way through it where you assume things or forget to, or just say, listen, you learned on your own and then I'll come back later and correct it. It's, you know, the life expectancy of the success of that person in that role or in the organization gets a lot lower, and that's scary. Because they could be really good people that just didn't have the means and methods they needed to be successful.
And whose fault is that? You know, that's the, you know, Kate, tell me if this is true of you too, but you know, I spend a lot of time thinking about and trying to discover what training is needed, whether that be in a local office or like what we kind of can create on a corporate level. So Brett, your comment about having employees feel, and Kate, you said this too, feel safe to speak up, to maybe disagree or offer a different opinion, or just say, you know, be honest about what they do know or don't know, is important, because I can sit and create tons of really fun training stuff that's really fun for me and exciting to create, but is it really needed? So I know that that's a big part of my work, is trying to identify what is needed and what is priority, what is needed most. And then, okay, how can we create or facilitate or nurture that?
Yeah. And then the other piece that goes with that is also, you know, what's the best delivery method?
Right.
Because that's the other challenge that we all face in this industry is our folks are hands-on. So they don't like to sit in a classroom and be told how to do something. Lecture format isn't great. Pictures and video help a little bit, but they still prefer the hands-on opportunities to really just go out and let's experiment. You know, Brett, you talked about new people are going to make mistakes. There's a branch manager here at Rupert that shared something with me. He has a quote on in his office. It says, "Go make new mistakes." That is his challenge to his team, is go make new mistakes. That's how a lot of us learn, is trial and error. And a lot of it's fixable. You know, it's not typically, you know, life and death of a perennial occasionally, you know, I mean, we did the wrong thing on the yellow leaf.
That's called an enhancement opportunity.
Fail quickly. And our guest last week, Keenan, brought that up, is how did he say it? It's not rocket science, or it's not life and death, as you said, Kate. But it's creating the culture around, like, it's okay to make mistakes. It's okay to say, I don't know how to do that. It's a safe environment for that. And then that's how we can improve. But
it requires alignment. If you're a strong, you know, field manager and you're with your team out there, and that's our role, the person that leads the crew every day, crew leaders, whatever you want to call them, and they're saying, hey, it's okay, don't worry about that, we'll figure this out next time you scalp that grass and this. But then if you come back and a production manager, operation manager says, hey, you know, why are you back so late? Or what's this? And then it's, well, we're trying to train. Well, I know, but you got to hit these hours, or hey, that's scalping, that's going to cost us. And so it has to be an organizationally driven thought that to fail is okay, to be learning is okay, how you can correct that. And then, and for it to feel like a failure is allowed within the organization. And so leadership just needs to be aware of what they're working with. And if you have a group of 10-year veterans versus 10-day, how you can hold them accountable and what you would accept. And, you know, the reason I'm giving you feedback, 10-year veteran, is because I know you're better than this and you know it too. you know, there's days where it really just jives and it feels like you could take on the world with the team that you have. And there's other days that we just are missing that connection to that point. And so we've learned, if anything, today, that the diversity of what you all have to deal with is insane. And so, you know, I envy the idea of an organization that has those that can focus training development. But then you're just tasked with such a monumental piece that is so unique and different that it's a lifetime of learning. So when you someday retire, we never retire from this industry. But the idea is, like, you know, you look back and you're like, we still got more to go. There is so much to learn in that space, and as it evolves,
absolutely
do such a thing. So I commend you for that work.
I mean, training and I interrupted you, but training and employee development is a constant. There's a constant effort. It's like plants have to be watered, you know, all the time. And so, you know, we're working with people, and there's individually and collectively, there's always a need to continue to be pushing that and nurturing that and creating space for that. There's always got to be some effort put towards that. And in my opinion, in one way or another, whatever way and resources your organization has, some are bigger and have more resources to have a Kate on staff and some don't, but there's other opportunities that a smaller business has. But the training piece, in my opinion, and maybe I'm biased because it's my role and my career, you know, position, but there's just a constant need to be feeding that animal, right? To continue to uplift and coach and mentor and train people.
And even if you don't have a dedicated person within your branch, there are a ton of resources available at a regional and state level, as well as NALP has a series of great learning opportunities for team members who want to learn more. They've got, you know, the CLT, training. They've got the irrigation training, and both are available in English and Spanish. There's also, you know, the extension offices within each of the states that have different, you know, in-person classes, webinars, just little learning workshops. There's tons of opportunities. If your team wants to learn, it doesn't have to be a big lift in-house. That's not the only resource that's available.
I agree. And I would also add, in addition to the horticulture and landscape training that Kate, you just recommended, also from the leadership and soft skill side, there's some great Harvard Managementor has some great stuff. Honestly, LinkedIn Learning has some really great, well put together material on leadership. And even things like I brought up, a new production manager that was promoted from a supervisor that really needs to brush up on Word and Outlook and emails and stuff. There's great stuff out there for that side too, that honestly is $50 or $100 per course, you know, that is really reasonable. And we are using that stuff too at Landcare. So.
Oh, absolutely. I worked with one of my training reps the other day, and I was like, if you need help on a specific thing, the help icon on all of the Word and Microsoft products, hugely helpful. I'm like, I'm not a wizard. I don't know all of these things. I don't have them all memorized, but I can figure it out. And I think it's giving your team the tools to engage that natural curiosity and their willingness to learn outside of the box.
We come from a very old industry, but we have a lot of people doing some new things. And so we've got great history, but we've got some great creativity coming out of it. And we're a sharing group. And so the opportunity to, you know, listen to companies that have been around for a long time or have scaled, to those that are just emerging, and that refreshing perspective of when it's just a 3 or 4 person organization and what they're able to do and how fast they're moving and the agility that they have, just, you know, we would all envy some of that sometimes too. And so as long as we continue to keep our position that we could learn something from everybody, then you know, you're not alone. We all in today, I don't think Kate said, I solved training and development for our organization. It is perfect. You know, no, right? We're all stumbling and winning and failing throughout the day. So it's to recognize, you know, there's always going to be effort. There's always going to be a job. And just like, man, we all hope you love what you do, because the two of you sound like you do very much. And then when you love it, then this becomes a lot easier, and you feel better when the big wins happen. So I'm preaching to the choir, you too, but let's go to, as we get to the end of this, our rose and thorn. So this is about how things are going professionally, personally, what you're excited to, spring and sprint, all those kind of things. So Kate, is a rose and thorn that you would like to share with the audience?
A rose is getting back into the swing of things, getting into the regular routine. The winter operations are kind of a little hit or miss all over, and I'm really looking forward to the standard routine that we get accustomed to on the maintenance side, especially, as well as planting season. I'm a big gardener, I mentioned that, and I did my seed layout this week, which is really exciting, and it gets me geared up for all of the new construction installs that we're going to be doing, and the flowers that are coming in the upcoming months. That's my rose, is flowers.
Any thorns, anything getting a little annoying or not too bad, nothing bad up there?
Thorns, mostly I'm just worried about my people more than anything. As we do get started, I think there's a lot of challenges that come with starting the season and making sure everybody has their heads on right. They're in the right, you know, headspace, as well as prepared for the physical exertion that comes with spring and summer seasons. So just looking forward to having opportunities to get out there and make sure that everybody is prepared for what's coming. Cause once the grass starts growing, the petal goes down, guys.
Skylar, your rose and thorn.
Yeah. You know, I'd say my biggest rose this week is it's NCLC week. So the National Collegiate Landscape Competition is this week. So I fly out on Wednesday morning to engage with peers across the country and then all these wonderful students that are studying landscaping at universities and colleges and schools across the country. It's a part of the year that I look forward to all the time since I was a student and went as a student and then as a professor taking my students and now on the industry support side. So that's my rose. Thorn is probably daylight savings this week. Just feeling like, why are we still doing daylight savings? And that's probably throwing a grenade in the conversation, but why are we still doing that? So that might be my thorn as well. I also have to say, here's a little thorn. I realized that, an embarrassing thorn. Earlier in our conversation, I think I referred to you as Kat instead of Kate. I apologize. This is not an excuse, but an explanation. We have a new member of our team, our L&D team here at Landcare who is named Kat. And I was just on a meeting with her before getting on this one. And so I apologize for that.
No stress. It's Kate spelled a little differently. So it throws a lot of people off.
Yeah.
For as many times as you said Kat, I think you said equally as many Kate. So I think it evened itself out to this whole conversation, Skylar. So you're totally fine.
I'm sorry. And you know, our Kat came from, we were in that part of the conversation talking about people coming from other industries. She came from that public education side. So I think I had her name in my head or whatever. So I apologize, Kate, for slipping up.
Apology accepted, not needed.
Yeah, she'll be our next guest. And so we'll get the audience really confused on which
I'll
one.
Call her Kate.
Yeah, we'll do that. I'm going to share with that NCLC. It's an exciting time of year for, I think, our industry and certainly the horticulture world. You know, it's just a great energy. If you have never participated, go and watch or recruit, all the, you know, just engage in that level because you'll leave it just thrilled and feeling very, very excited about what the future holds and just the enthusiasm behind it. And so BYU, Provo hosts it very well and you get just a scale of the West. I think it's just the Rockies. It's just an exciting part and time of that. And the exciting part is I'm unable to make that part, but I'm going to be there by that weekend to go ski. And so I'll see a bunch of landscape friends after and I'll get to hear all the fun stories on the slope side. And you know, the thorn wise, you know, we're just gotta, this conversation poses that we've been working really hard with some training this winter and Mother Nature's been mild. So it's allowed us to really accomplish that. How do we carry it forward? How do we continue to build that momentum? So sometimes some fear and anxiety comes at some, you know, investments and time and people will be lost, but we were talking about today about how to just push right through and so they can really get a good return. So, but that's the job. That's what we punch our time cards for every single day. Well, thank you, Kate, Kat, all the same, right? We're it's just the name. It's right. Come, Skylar. We could come up with another nickname for Skylar later. We'll call him or something like
I've been
that.
Called and lots of things.
That's right. It's right. We won't use all the names we've been called. but thank you. Yeah, I thought you brought a great perspective and approach to how to get people ready for the season ahead.
Yeah, I agree. It's fun to see your energy and enthusiasm. I noticed that a few minutes ago, you when you shared your thorn, you said my people. And to me, that shows that you take ownership and love of the people that you work with and you have stewardship to help train and support. So, Kate, it's been good to get to know you better today.
Absolutely. Looking forward to chatting with you guys again in the future. Sorry, I won't make NCLC, but definitely a number of the Rubric team members will be out there. I know you guys interviewed Joe Ketterer a couple weeks ago. He'll be participating. My colleague Courtney, John Herrick from the PA region. So we'll have plenty of representation from the Rubric team.
Yep, that's all you need. Keep him going. Well, thank you again. Thank you to our listeners. We look forward to a very full spring of guests and conversations that will help you build a better business. You all have a great week.